new faces here. And we see a couple of, it's always a misperception is sometimes created when you talk about seeing old faces. So perhaps we should rather say faces I've seen before. DG, Mr. Lionel October. But we do have a very full team here because members, we've got the briefing on the NCC, the auditory findings by the Auditor General, comment there, the DTI third quarter, and trade negotiations UK post-Brexit. So those we have in front of us. We, as I acknowledged already, the DG of Trade and Industry, Mr. Lionel October, but we also have from Trade and Industry, and I need to mention them first, Mr. Khan, the Chief Financial Officer, yes, but is she here? Matamela, oh yes, there we are, Acting Group Chief Operating Officer, Mr. Zakorda, Deputy DG, Special Economic Zones, Mr. Harnival, Chief Economist, yes, another face I see many times, I don't want to say old faces now, Ms. Matabocha, Ms. She's the DDG Trade and Investment TISA, because I don't, yeah, right, and Ms. Mabichi Thompson, yes, DDG Incentive Development and Administrative Division, and Ms. Pele, Acting DDG Industrial Development Division. We saw you quite often as well, right? And then we have with us as well Mr. Ibrahim Mohammed, the Commissioner of the NCC. Are you much better now? Yes, all right. Ms. Tezi Mabuza, Deputy Commissioner, who was holding the fort for a while, thank you. Mr. Anton van der Merwe, Chief Financial Officer, thank you. And now I haven't forgotten you, Nikki, Ms. Kruger, Chief Director, Trade Negotiations. I see you there, don't often. But, you know, I see someone next to you, and I do know your face, I think, but your hair's done differently, it is? Oh, yes, but when I, earlier on, I never saw you. Right, okay, fine, thank you. Now, that's everyone. And in the opening and welcome, before I go through the adoption of the agenda, Mr. Hermans, the committee secretary, received some correspondence from one of the committee members who made a reference to it yesterday, the Honourable MacPherson, with respect to sugar. And I will address that again at tea because I now have read this and realised that we have in fact been dealing with these issues. But let me address it round about tea time. And Mr. MacPherson, you said you were popping out at what time again? 11?
I have a telephone conference at 11, from 11 to 12. So if you could try and address it while I'm here, that would be helpful. Or we could do it via teleconference as well.
No. We'll do it right here. Fine. And I want to check, Mr. Hermans, has everyone received a copy of this?
Yes, Chairperson.
Oh, right, okay. So that addresses that particular one. And we then look at the agenda, which we're hoping to close at 1 o'clock. We are getting better at time management, all of us. So can we please have a proposal for the adoption? Thanks, Honourable Tiako. Seconded by the Honourable Buyani. Thank you. The apologies are Honourable Khadeli, our witness, also the Honourable Esterhazen is attending another committee meeting. We do not have any other apologies. Adrian Williams has just come in. He's been on medical leave. And we do have an apology from the Honourable Tierko, who is required to leave shortly. I'm not sure what shortly means, to attend labour. What time would that be, Honourable Tierko? 9:30. Thank you. All right. But you'll be with us until that time. The others, and that's the Economic Freedom Fighters, the Honourable Flanguini, the Freedom Front Plus, those two we have not received apologies from, no. So let us then move on. I think we can immediately begin with the briefing by the National Consumer Commission on the audit findings raised by the Auditor General in the 2017-2018 annual report, if you would begin.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Honourable Chair, the presentation has been arranged in such a way so as to just give a brief historical account of the audit results and findings over the years. I do not intend going through all of those slides. It is there for the purposes of the committee to give an indication of where the NCC came from, the challenges it experienced over the years, and where we are now currently. Then I propose to deal briefly with the progress against the findings by the Auditor General, and then going to perhaps a bit more detail with regard to these findings, and then just briefly deal with issues that require immediate attention. With regard to the first part, I would then request the committee to go directly to slide number 9, which deals with the most recent years in terms of the historical audit results. In 2015 and 2016, 2016-2017, the Commission had achieved unqualified opinions from the Auditor General, but with some rather serious findings. In the 2017-2018 year, last year, for the first time, we were very happy because we'd received a clean audit with a few findings, but a clean audit. And this was a team effort on the part of the entire commission, but it was a very happy day indeed. To then go to slide 11, where I would then, this provides a summary of the 23 findings by the Auditor General. And of the 23 findings, 78% of them have been fully implemented. They've been dealt with and implemented. That amounts to 18 out of the 23. 5 of them are in progress, and I'll speak to them later. Of the 23 findings, 10 were repeat findings, and 8 of those 10 have been dealt with. Now, only 22% of the findings are still in progress, and the progress has been reported and presented to our audit and risk committees. If you go to slide 13, Chair and Honourable Members. This deals in a bit more detail with each of the 23 findings. Here again, I do not propose to go through each and every one of them, especially the ones that have been fully implemented. The committee will note that on page 13 in the complete right-hand column, it's been marked in green. This means that all these findings have been dealt with and are being implemented. On page 14, again, there's a summary. There were a total amount of 3 findings, so they've all been implemented, and this is in the office of the commissioner in my office. On page 15, we deal with the division advocacy, education, and awareness. There we had 2 findings, which were fully dealt with and implemented. And page 16 again then provides a summary thereof. When we go to slide 17, we will note that there too, there were two findings which have all been implemented. It's all green, and there are no issues there. The slide 18 is again then just a summary of those. Now, I'm dealing with this in this manner, Chair, because the Chair could, the committee could always ask questions if they needed to at the end. But on slide 19, we deal with the Legal Services Division. Now, there was one matter there. It's, I think the colour is orange, if I'm not mistaken. And that dealt with some of the internal control deficiencies where standard operating procedures for the collecting, and reporting on performance information wasn't fully in place. We say here 60% task progressing well, but yesterday before I left office, I was presented with a document for my approval on these SOPs, so this matter is most likely also has also been dealt with, but I still need to approve it. It will happen within the next day or two. Right, so. Then, on page 21, on supply chain management, on this page we would find 2 findings marked in yellow. They dealt with non-registered VAT vendors that claimed VAT, input VAT. Now, here there's been much work done. The only reason why it is still in yellow is because the process is still incomplete, because we haven't been able to recover the funds as of yet. As soon as the funds are recovered, this will also become green. So it is somewhat out of our hands at this stage. Then, if we go to page slide 22, there are again 2 that are yellow, and the tasks are 80% complete. The one deals with the contact register. Now, a complete contact register has now been implemented, and there is monthly monitoring in place. Then, with regards to the second one, that deals with assets with the wrong description in the assets register. The areas have been corrected manually, and we're in the process of updating this on the accounting system. We are experiencing some errors with the system itself, and as soon as these errors are seen to, then we'd be able to get them onto the system. The asset management is also part of the internal audit process for quarter three, to ensure that the controls are effective. So with regards to the implementation status of SCM, slide 23, there were 5 findings. 80% of the tasks are complete in 3 of them, and in 2 they have been dealt with effectively. And I've also explained that the others are really on the way to being implemented. When it comes to ICT on slide 25, the finding dealt with user access privileges, and there's a call for a periodic review of the access profiles. This has been done, but a proper audit trail was not properly kept, and this is also being scheduled for review now in February. With regards to page 27, slide 27, for the financial findings, we'll see on slide 27, all those tasks are complete. They've been dealt with. Same goes to slide number 28. On slide 29, there was a finding with regards to petty cash reconciliations. According to policy, monthly reconciliations had to be done. Reconciliations were being done, but only as petty cash funds were being replenished. This is now being implemented, and we'll be able to have the color green very, very soon. That then, to a large extent, deals with the AG's findings of the number of findings. There are about eight findings in finance, where seven have been fully implemented and one is about 80%. On slide 33, Chair, I deal with issues that require immediate attention. Here we need to fast track the implementation of the recommendations for SCM, and this is being done. The second one is the prioritization for the finalization of all repeat findings. There are two repeat findings that are being attended to as we speak. And then to ensure that proper processes are followed when appointing external auditors, the Auditor General has advised us, has given us a choice to either go with them to do our audit or to go with a private firm. And we have decided to appoint a private firm. We are in the process. We are consulting our Audit and Risk Committee, who will be part of the recruitment process to ensure that everything is done in the manner that it should be done. And then lastly, Chair, we need to maintain our clean audit status. I've worked very hard, my team has worked very hard to get here. This is probably the last time that I'll be addressing this committee. My term comes to an end quite soon, in 3 months' time. So I'd like to thank this committee for its guidance and assistance over the years. Thank you, Chair. We are prepared to answer any questions that the committee may have for us.
Thank you very much, Commissioner Mohammed. And yes, there has been a turnaround, but I know there are a number of clarifications people will require and questions. But may I indicate my opinion?
Hi, Joan. I'm your assistant.
And what the hell is that? I think this is something... No. The fourth industrial revolution is definitely here, as we all are aware. And sometimes they do arrive uninvited to offer whatever assistance they think I require. But I was saying I would like to add my appreciation to you for your commitment. But as I say, I know there will be a number of queries and questions, and I was about to indicate to members that we should try to be as succinct as a commissioner as we engage. All right? I saw Honourable McLaubo, Honourable MacPherson, Honourable Alberts, Honourable Esterhazen, in that order as a start. Thank you.
No, thanks, Comrade Chair. Let's congratulate the National Consumer Commission for achieving a clean audit chair. And it looks like it's been a long journey since there was a qualification many years ago and many issues because and you could see that if there is a focus both in terms of the leadership, which is the commission itself, then the administration and the audit remedial action plan is being followed and working closely with the AG, you could see results. The challenge now is to say how do you maintain it? But the congratulations must be able to go to the team, including the department, because that you give oversight to them and the support they need. But what can you discuss on clean audit? People have achieved excellent results. That's what we want. And it demonstrates that if you put your eyes on the ball, and we must also thank the commissioner in as much as the term is ending, including the deputy commissioner when you're not well. She was able to keep the fort to keep the team working. Therefore, on behalf of ourselves, we should join you, Chair, in congratulating them. It's an easy one to engage. Therefore, in the next parliamentary term, then when you come and bring the books again, you just should just be one of those that continues to be exemplary to keep the flag flying, because there are men and women who can do a good job. Those are the ways one could say, well, the decision they've made, we hope that bringing in a new team, because auditors must be rotated because of the challenges we experience both here at home and abroad. We hope that you are getting the external team of good quality so that they don't actually drop the ball, so that today is a regression. But thanks, Comrade Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Matlobo. Honourable Macpherson.
Thank you very much. And I'm glad the DG is here, because I think, you know, while it's commendable, the work that's been done, for me, the NCC is still not where it should be and is still not, I think, advocating strong enough for consumers. And I certainly get, well, I certainly am of the view that the NCC should be more aggressively on the side of consumers. It should not be having to wait for complaints to be submitted to it. It should be thinking proactively as to how it can stop behavior which is not in the best interests of consumers. And I think for me, the crystallization of that was over the timeshare report, that it had to take a complaint and many complaints in order for the NCC to clearly act in what everybody knew was a dubious industry at best. And then it took 18 months while people continued to be ripped off month after month. And I just hope that DG, you know, whoever comes into the next term, that the DTI is going to give the NCC the real clout that it needs to be a protector for consumers, and that it enforces the CPA in a strong and vigorous way and doesn't have to wait to be told to do so. That is the type of NCC that we are looking for. So I think that clean audits are a step in the right direction, but I think that we also need to see legislative steps in the right direction so we can see a new reformed NCC in the future.
Honourable Macpherson, Honourable Albert.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for the presentation. It is important that a proper groundwork is laid within the NCC to adjudicate and assist consumers problems, and I'm glad that you're on your way to do that. I also want to reiterate a bit what Honourable McPherson has said, and I hope that this lays the groundwork going forward for a more aggressive NCC. You know, South Africa is facing many troubles. You know, we've got Eskom and all of those things happening, but there are many other things that are really oppressing people. I want to say oppress them, especially consumers. If you look at how they are being cheated by the private industry in various ways, the holiday clubs is just one, and it's taken some time to finalize. The thing about the holiday clubs is that those contracts are illegal. You don't need to have a first year legal degree to know that. There's no such thing as a perpetual contract in our law. It's never existed. Yet these people still sell those contracts. I cannot understand why we cannot just stop them, get an interdict. You can stop the whole industry from doing this. But we're going on to investigation panels and reports, and then there's this discussion that you're going to have with the industry to voluntarily stop those contracts where people that have entered them that are vulnerable, that they will, you know, stop those contracts or release the people from those contracts. Now that's commendable. I have to give you credit for that, but it takes too long to get there. And there are many, many other things that's happening out there where people are ripped off. And what is happening right now is that private institutions like ALTA and in some cases AfriForum and other smaller institutions which we don't always know of are filling the space that government should be filling, or at least the commission should be filling, in terms of tackling these abuses. People are suffering out there. The economy is in dire straits. And the vultures are always swirling when we are in a situation like this. And people are being ripped off left and center, especially the poor who do not know their rights. But even people in the middle class who should know better do not always know their rights, or they are simply just too busy to survive themselves to, you know, look at these matters. So, you know, we still send in, our party still sends in a lot of complaints to the NCC via our offices on various issues, mostly still holiday clubs, but there are also other issues. The Kruger matter is still hanging in the air. In fact, Gerry Nel is now taking the Kruger matter to court. Why is he taking the matter to court? It's not his job to do that. He's doing it because nobody else is moving on the matter. So I'm saying, and I want to urge you, I want to beg you, on behalf of the people of this country, because I see these matters coming to me a lot, and being a person with legal background, I know when these people are being ripped off. But we do not have, as political parties, capacity to deal with this all the time. But the Commission does, and if the Commission doesn't have capacity, it must ask the Minister for more, or ask us, members of Parliament, to intervene on your behalf and try to capacitate you. We know you've had capacity problems since the start. We do acknowledge that. We're not being unreasonable. But I want to urge that that you go from first gear to second gear to third, fourth, fifth. I think cars have 8 gears nowadays. But, you know, get onto the highway where you can pick up speed and really tackle these guys who are ripping off the regular people in our country. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Alberts. Honourable Esterhazen.
Thank you, Chair. Further to what Edgar Albert said, I also concerned, Madam Chair, when I read an Audit General report or audit report or very poor previous year financials and repeat findings. It is true that the Auditor General must act in the best interest and improve the economic well-being of the citizens of this country. And the Auditor General won't be doing its job if it doesn't do that. The Auditor General, I fought under the Public Audit Amendment Bill, the Public Amendment Act as it was amended, and has given the Auditor General now the teeth to contact the hawks even. So there shouldn't be any repeated findings and things. And that is not good for the country as a whole if we keep seeing this in the report. Thank you, Chair.
Have you completed? Thank you, Honourable Yesterhazen. Is that everyone who wished to comment or clarify? I have a couple of clarifications myself and comments. On page 7, a reference was being made to unqualified opinion with the emphasis on matters with a reference to a previous period and some of the challenges that had to be overcome. And it stated very clearly about the irregular expenditure, etc., the period. And then the, I suppose, third or fourth bullet talks about the financial records of NCC were poor. It would have been helpful to know which years you're talking about in the previous years, to be more specific there, because everything else is very clear on that page. The other areas, there are lessons that were learned by the NCC when it had to turn this around from a very, very challenging situation where very little had been regular, if you like. And those lessons would have been of great and will be of great value to any other entity that finds themselves in this situation. And I think it would be extremely constructive, Commissioner, if you could give us a page on the lessons learned, how they were addressed and overcome, because indeed you faced a sorry state of affairs when you arrived there. And yes, indeed, one result is a clean audit. That's one, it's indicative, but there are many other areas that have been raised by the members here with respect to consumers. Indeed, we are aware of the Cougar case, which had come up last year and so on, and we are informed that currently there's an inquest going on, and that I'm sure and hope that you are keeping an eye and monitoring those proceedings. So once again, lessons can be learned from that particular undertaking. The other thing that had come up during the course of our 5 years, as it were, was the relationship that I thought you were trying to build and strengthen between yourselves and the National Regulator for Compulsory Specifications, because in many ways it's one coin, if you like, and you're one side and they are the other side. And this became very apparent during the Cougar case, as you know. And what is it that can be done in this regard? The other point with respect to one of the questions raised here, in this case by the Honourable Alberts, relates to something we have learned as a committee. There are bylaws, fair enough, that doesn't come directly under you, but legislation and secondary legislation in the way of regulation that quite frankly should no longer be on the books. And yet they remain there. And I do think it would be very constructive if the NCC was able to review all of the regulatory framework that is impacting negatively on consumers wherever they are. An example was given here in the case of those, is a timeshare, which for the last 9 years has come before this committee, and we do need to begin to do something about that. The last point that one would like to make is, you spoke about somewhere here, and I didn't mark it specifically, you were considering hiring, was it external auditors? Now, we all know the state of the auditing industry in our country at the moment. I would hope you're going to be very cautious and careful as to who the department uses, because I've yet to come across, you know, more than two that are, I'm not sure what one can say, but practice with integrity. And we really have got, if we are going to be going out, let's not put ourselves in any trouble in that direction, please. It's really an appeal from myself. Finally, we are asking everyone this with respect, but it applies more to the DG and the third quarterly report. But we would like all of the entities to try and come back to us in writing about the state, the current state of their capacity with respect to scarce skills, scarce strategic skills. Anything is a skill. Just picking up a cup is a skill, but we mean strategic skills in relation to your department. What is the status there? So that, again, it is of value and very constructive for the next period of Parliament, including for the executive itself. And on this note, thank you to the whole team for being here, and over to yourself, Commissioner, with your team to respond.
Thank you, Chair. DC, do you want to respond to the one, I didn't quite get the question that the Chair posed with regards to slide 7.
Specific in every other bullet. We talk about here previous years, the year before, 4 years before, or the whole period before. What do we mean when we say they were poor, the financials had to be revised? How were they revised? You clearly didn't, you weren't creative about it. You know, you may have had to do a forensic on it. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you to members for the opportunity. The areas that we are speaking about is the audit that we did for 2013-14. And then based on some of the areas, just to go back and say that we had a vacuum wherein we had lost some of the records that, yes, that were stolen for the 2011-12 and the 20, yeah, for the 11-12. So for us to reconstruct some of the areas, we had to go back to even some of the SLA that we had to ask some of the entities that had signed SLA with us so that we can get their ballpark figures so that we can reconstruct and also know exactly in terms of some of the contracts what were our liabilities. So we had to restate or to now go back and restate some of the figures because they were not restated correctly.
I'm not sure if there were any other questions. There were more recommendations and suggestions from members. But if there's any specific question, then I'll be glad to respond there too.
G?
Maybe just to respond to the issues raised by members, and also just to join you in saying that the progress that has been made, especially with regards to the state that the NCC was in, and that they have now a clean audit. But as you correctly said, from now onwards, and we take it that the clean audit is a basic requirement, and so on, and that is our policy going forward. But on the broader point raised, I think very very articulately by the Honourable Members McPherson, Alberts, and Mr. Estesen, is that, and others, is that the request for a more assertive role by the NCC the kind of role they played when they closed down the plant in the listeriosis crisis, where, as you know, that was the NCC led the charge with regards to the closing down of that plant. But I must say that we fully concur with the members, and the minister has at every of the minister's quarterly engagement with the entities. I think the NCC leadership is well aware of it. The minister has asked them to really, we protect their, to act without fear or favor, but we do expect that, as indicated, consumers must be protected. And we expect that a more assertive role to be played, and I think it has been emphasized.
Yes, Deputy Commissioner.
Thank you. And just to add on the issue of the proactiveness, we really appreciate also the issues that have been raised in relation to the weaknesses in legislation. And most of the areas, we pick them now as we act upon them, that really there is kind of like conflicts in also some of the legislations and also the age of some of the legislations that were not reviewed on time. And would really say we thank the DTI as a mother department, because in certain cases, as we look at our budget itself, it doesn't allow us to be as reactive or as proactive as we could be, because wherein we lack mandate, we know that we will be challenged. And if we do not have the funds for that, looking at our goods and services budget of like 13 million, sometimes it barely covers some of the areas that are pertinent. When we look at just the timeshare matter, it cost us 2 million. We had to go back to the DG and said, we do not have funds for that. We want to go ahead with it, but we do not have funds to really be proactive. So we find ourselves limited to the mandate, so that we become cautious, because we do not take the risks that sometimes we are needed to take on certain areas. And also on the issue of the Ford Kuga, I would say that members are aware that it seems as if we are stalling, but the engagements are in such a way that we wanted to cover some of the areas of the fines and all that, but it needed us also to engage council to look at the manner in which we were crafting some of our arguments in relation to issues of liabilities, especially on the issues of strict liabilities, because it's some of the skills that we do not have in terms of arguing and putting up some of the matters. So we are done with the papers. We just wanted a review around that. So it's now happening. We've appointed counsel, and then it's where in sometimes we even go back to the DTI and say, on this area we are going to run short of funds, and the DG sometimes would come in and cover us on those areas, and we appreciate. But we really do, we want to be reactive, but we have to be cautious, and we hope that we are going to get the assistance that we actually hope for. Thank you.
I think, Bing, you know, we appreciate your frank response to that, because it has been an issue raised repeatedly by the Honourable Alberts here. I don't know if that assists you, Honourable Alberts, before I take Honourable McLaughlin, or does it?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Now, thank you very much for your answers. I appreciate the fact that you are working under strenuous circumstances and financial limitations. So we would like to, from our side, try to, you know, impress upon the Minister, you know, when budgets are allocated, that you are given more funding, and I hope that the DG will also help in that regard. And Deputy Commissioner, I want to thank you for your straightforward answers as well on the issues. I think that people are just there's just a great unease, I guess, out there with the manner how the private sector is operating in many ways. And I'm generalizing, not everybody's, you know, cheating, but there are a lot of, you know, practices out there that's actually not acceptable. I'd just like to ask you one straight question, and part of the release of the Holiday Matters Club, Holiday Club's investigation and the panel's release on their report. There was a statement made from the commissioner, by the commissioner, that said that there would be an engagement with the Holiday Clubs to cancel contracts, especially those ones that were signed by vulnerable persons, you know, like elderly people and so forth. How far is that process going? Because there are a lot of people out there who are in distress, and they would like to see those contracts cancelled as quickly as possible. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Elvitz. Honourable Matlobel.
Well, Chair, I think the issues that are being raised around proactive role, in as much as we're here just for the audit, not that we don't have other issues, but the issues raised by other colleagues are important. My suggestion is that, like you said, before we rise, the entities, including the Consumer Commission, one around the issues of the capability, the areas you said, but the two issues my other colleagues have raised, let them give us a report before we rise. One on the question of the Fort Kuka, because it was the biggest issue. And then including the other areas Honorable Albers is raising, let it be part of the report. But the DG clearly understand that there are these other areas where they don't have to be reported to because of the vulnerability consumers they get exposed to. And the capacity of the consumers to stand up for their rights, not all of them, because we have to be on the side of the most vulnerable. That's what I would suggest, because I don't want to get on other additional issues other than the issue on the table. But these two important issues other colleagues have raised, as ANC will appreciate to see, we don't only talk about them, but we actually started to act. And when we act, let's act with zeal, because these are not new matters. They've been there for quite some time, and we don't want to see some of this happening. That will be our suggestion, Chair, that in addition to what we are requiring. Thank you.
Now, I think that puts it in a nutshell, Commissioner and the team, and DG, I'm sure, you know, your relationship with them will help as well. But we may not be seeing you again. I say may not, you never know. You are going to send us this back in writing. If we do not see you again in a face-to-face engagement, we do appreciate the work of the entire team. Thank you very much. Thank you. Now, you may stay or leave. We are going to move on to the briefing by the DTI on its third quarter financial and non-financial performance. We're on track with time. Yes, please. Yeah. As we're doing that changeover, I made a reference in my opening to a letter regarding the sugar industry, and it is something we'll start off with as the DG sits down to ask him, given our numerous engagements with the sugar industry here in Parliament and three site visits during which the issue of water was raised, DG, during which the issue of water was raised about the drought and the measures that had been offered in this regard. Members of the DTI were present during that process, and in particular at our last engagement, the commitment of, I think it was Rural, the Department of Rural Land Reform from KZN, the province of agriculture in that, to assist in that regard for the water constraints. And as it were, it may not have been quite the same as it's been in the Western Cape, but certainly elements of the drought were apparent at that point. So, as indicated to Mr. McPherson, Honourable McPherson, we're not going to deal with it now because we do need from DTI a status report up to, you know, if you like, the end of January as to what is happening and what measures they have taken that they have not already communicated to us in that regard. Thank you very much. So we'll also put that in a letter in writing so it's clear. Honourable McPherson?
Sorry,
when do you want me to discuss or speak to the actual request in my letter to have a formal meeting on this? Because, I mean, you seem to be outsourcing that to another or to the DG to respond, and I must wait. So I just want to know, when do you want me to actually speak to this specific request?
I think it's quite simple, but let me allow the Honourable Mathlobo to come in first before I respond.
Well, Chair, we see the correspondence. It's an important matter. But I thought that Honourable McPherson would do an honourable thing, engage with you. And when we have engaged, and engaged with the whips, the committee whips, of the various parties here to say how do you take the matter forward, rather than all of us now discussing. If Honourable McPherson wants the matter to be discussed by the committee, it's a different matter. But it's clearly addressed to you to say, look at it and apply your mind. In our cases, the ANC, we have Comrade Peggy Hadebe, you will consult with him, the DA, but it's an important matter that can't be postponed. Probably by the end of this week, you make a determination after we have spoken to the parties that are sitting in the committee whether his request of having a joint meeting, because it also affected the other committee that he's requesting to look at, which is a rural development and agriculture, whether you accede to it or not.
It's the rural and land that came out of a site, a field visit, and that is why I'm asking the DG to please, they were going to come back to us with a report. That field visit took place late last year on the specific matter. So I do think that as we have already deliberated on this issue, but we don't have the latest information, we need a status report so that we can utilize that as the base wherein we will engage with the whip himself. But as I say, I'm not opening it for discussion because I do require the information from the department.
Well, thank you, Mr. Mathlobo. It's helpful to get that position. I'm not sure if that is an ANC position, but can I then take it that a discussion is going to be held, an engagement is going to be held, and an answer will then be forthcoming by the end of this week as to if and when a committee meeting or joint committee meeting can be scheduled to look at this matter? Is that the official position that I'm getting? Because I'm still unclear, and I think you're conflating my request with what you're asking the DG to do. So, you know, my request is completely separate from what the DG may or may not provide to you. It's just a simple request was to, can we have that meeting? And if we have that meeting, then of course that information can be made available to it. But it shouldn't be one after the other. It should be both. And that's just what I'm trying to get a clarity from, is that by the end of this week, would it be most likely that I would have a way forward then?
Well, put it this way, I haven't spoken to the Honourable Hadebe. I'm not sure he'll even be returning this week. And I need to make that clear. That's the first thing. We have a Manco tomorrow, and usually any sensitive issues or pertinent, serious issues are discussed with the whip if he cannot attend the Manco. And I haven't had that opportunity. So what I am saying, taking into cognizance what the Honourable Mathlobo has said as well, and that is, I do want this information from the DG, because information assists people in making informed decisions. I do not like to take decisions with whatever information I could have got is missing. And as this information, I believe, needs to be collated by the DG, I'm sure we'll get it early enough. And indeed, I were going to commit myself to a meeting this week, because then I'd have to excuse myself right now, adjourn the meeting, and start contacting others. And I don't think that's constructive at all. Thank you. Right, can we proceed with the third quarterly?
Yes, thanks, Honourable Chair. And just on the earlier point, as I said, as you know, the DTI has been actively engaged and very extensively engaged with the sugar industry. The senior leadership also paid a visit to the entire industry, myself, Tande Pile, the chief director. And as you know, we've provided extensive support. So we'll definitely table you that report, and we will also support the idea that the committee convenes and that we invite the entire industry here and the DTI. As I said, we with them, we've been working extensively with them to both grow and transform the industry. Honourable Chair, I thank you for the opportunity to present the DTI's third quarter report. I'm sure we will still be having a few engagement, but given that this could be the sort of the last quarterly report or third quarterly report we give, I firstly just want to express on behalf of the DTI our thanks to the committee for your guidance and, as I said, your active support to the DTI in us growing the economy. As I said, I'm going to be very brief. I got a request from yourself, Honourable Mushlobo, if we could just stick to the highlights. There is a detailed quarterly report attached on all the performance indicators, so I'm not going to spend too much time on that, but I will just give the high-level overview. I think if we start with the economic overview as a start, I think it's now common knowledge that whilst the global economy had some growth in 2017-2018, we know that there's lots of negative headwinds, and it was said at the WEF this year that it's one of the worst periods for the global economy, and there's a lot of downside risks to that. And I think that slide just indicates the sort of global decline that we're facing and headwinds. I think the only the positive news, whilst we are still have a too high rate of unemployment, we must say that in terms of the quarter, the third quarter 2018, we exited the technical recession that we faced. So that was a positive quarter we experienced, and as I said, the other positive part of it is that it was led by the manufacturing sector with a 2%, over 2% growth, which assisted us to exit the recession. But as I said, despite us getting out of the technical recession, unemployment still remains unacceptably high, and it's still our biggest challenge. As I said, yesterday's Stats South Africa results shows a very, very slight decline, but as I said, unemployment still remains our biggest challenge. The other important issue to report on is that because of the decline in the exchange rate and because of oil prices and our biggest imports, our trade surplus is getting smaller and smaller, and that trade gap is narrowing. And as I said, even because of, as I said, the effect of a currency decline is that the price of our imports, especially oil imports, rises, and that expands our trade deficit. But on the whole, our trade with Africa, as I said, one of our biggest trading partners, almost one-third of our exports now go to the continent, remains positive. But we must note that growth, especially in the oil economies, Nigeria and Angola, has declined significantly, and that does have a dampening effect on our exports. But as I said, the story of the continent is still a positive one. Again, also, our trade deficit with the BRICS countries also widening. The only country we have a positive trade balance with is India, but on the whole, we still have a deficit with the other economies. If I then go to the actual performance of the department, I think the I won't go through these things. The committee is quite familiar with the vision. If we go, as I said, the DTI is obviously number one priority is industrial development, and this guides all our policy instruments. I think the positive to report on is Atlantis. As you will see later, it was also during this quarter that we launched the special economic zone in the Atlantis area. But the positive development is the revival of the textile industry with a 1.3 billion investment. As I said, it's a new development to see growth and new investments in this important labor-intensive sector. The other major development in this quarter is the adoption by Cabinet of a two-year program we've been working on for a new automotive production development program. And as you know, this program agreed with the entire sector plus NUMSA is that we do have agreed master plan now right to 2035. So we provided certainty to the automotive industry, and on the back of that announcement, you have a 40 billion investment, which is happening as we speak. As I said yesterday, there was just an announcement from Ford and others around doubling production in a number of the automotive plants. So as I said, this is our model for how industrial policy can work. But as I said, this positive development is we provided the sector, which makes up 7% of GDP, we've agreed a long-term plan. Also positive development, especially given the recent Brilpadda find, the oil finds or gas finds off the coast of Mossel Bay, is that there's been an investment in Richards Bay for the LPG, for the gas industry. And as you know, the DTI has a gas industrialization plan, which we have been working on over the past few years, and hopefully now with the latest billion find, in a gas find, this could be the start of our gas gas industrialization drive. The other news is also there has been a turnaround, as you know, like sugar and others. The steel industry has been in crisis because of the global glut of steel. We've managed to, through our support again to this industry, that we've been able to turn around the steel industry, and you're starting to see the revival. As you know, ArcelorMittal, for the first time in a number of years, had a positive results, both in terms of production but also in terms of profits. And then also Via Steel's mill has expanded production. So that's the turnaround for the steel industry. So we can say that we've been able to at least stabilize the industry, and it's on a very slow growth phase now again. Also to just report on the other important initiative is, as you know, we used to talk about call centers, we used to talk about BPOs, business processing outsource, but as you said, the new incentive that we launched is because this industry has matured, we launched the Global Business Services renewed incentive. As you know, this sector is now very big in South Africa. In total, there's over 200,000 people employed in this sector, and over 40,000 is in offshoring, where it's a global. Yesterday, I was at Excel on the waterfront, and global outsourcing, global business services company, they are all expanding, and we see growth in this sector. But this program was launched by the minister in London. Also, then turning to some of our incentive programs, as you will see in our report, there has been a slower take-up because of the slowdown in the economy, and especially companies running at less than full utilization, but we're still able to extend the incentives in the quarter to 179 enterprises, 7,000 jobs projected, and 1,000 new job created. There's also been investment from the private sector, and as I said, also our program, as you know, we've now supported 131 black industrialists, and we are supporting them on an ongoing basis. It's not just that we just give the incentive, and we still support with market support, with other kinds of support. So there's the different intervention made around the BI program. Then turning to the international arena, and you will be getting a very important presentation later on, as I said, on Brexit, but just that we managed to again successfully engage with the European Union as we did with the United States. We've been able to get South Africa excluded from these steel tariffs which was imposed by the US and the EU, and they exempted us from that provision. And secondly, we've completed the work around the services negotiations in SADC. Also on the FDI front, as I said, as our minister reported yesterday, even though there has been a global slowdown in FDI, South Africa managed to secure investment or increase of almost 400% in the amount of investment, and this covers some of that, but also on the trade side, there's a positive story to tell, and the figures are reflected there. As you know, we mainly support small and medium enterprises to enter the export market, and we assisted 234 companies in the quarter. As you know, the Global Exporter Passport Program is also this program where it's very small enterprises, first-time companies that want to export. We want to help them to build the capacity because, of course, your product must be of a particular quality for you to be able to participate in export markets. As you know, we've continued our trade exhibitions and trade shows. We've been to China, to Qatar, to Kuwait, and then to Sweden, and then to Paris, where we put on trade shows over the period. Then turning to the special economic zone, as I said, during the quarter, the big announcement was and the launch in December of the launch of the Atlantis Special Economic Zone, but also we proceeded to approve the Kumasi SEZ in Mpumalanga. So we've now, Honourable Chair, we've completed 10 Special Economic Zone designations. There's only two provinces that still need to come on board, that is Northwest and the Northern Cape. But as we've also reported further on, that especially three of the economic zones, it's London, Kuha, and Dubai Trade Port, are doing exceedingly well with attracting investments. Apart from that, we're also continuing our industrial parks program, which was also mentioned in the SONA, and we really want to thank the committee for the support we've got in terms of launching this program. So in the quarter, Puta Dichaba Industrial Park, we've done the renovations and the upgrading there, but also we are, and I think Honourable McPherson has always raised this, we want the industrial park, the owners of this park, to really provide proper services, to provide lower rents, and so on. And so we convened a symposium. That's the third one, where we're trying to group them all into one structure and one association or forum where we can meet regularly, we can have an executive committee, and we can start developing standards where we can actually impose on them that it's not, this is not to collect rents, it's to attract investments and offer world-class infrastructure support. But as I said, the work, this is our priority to the development of these industrial parks, because many of them are located in areas of high unemployment. Then turning to the transformation part, because which is the second leg of our program, industrialization and transformation, the implementation of the Black Economic Empowerment. The important initiative here is the Youth Employment Service. This is a private sector-led initiative, but the DDI, through the BEE Act, we are offering points if companies employ a certain percentage of young people and bring them and provide them with internships and employment for a minimum period of 12 months. And as I said, you get an additional support in terms of the BEE scorecard if you take them into employment and keep them on permanently. So that is an important development. And then also the defense sector, which is a very strategic sector, they completed their charter and that was gazetted. They're turning towards the regulatory program or the legislative program, which I think you are most familiar with, and it's actually you that have been doing all the work, and we have supported you on that. But as you know, we're thankful to the committee for bringing those three bills before Parliament in the final quarter of last year, which was the Copyright Amendment Bill, the Performance Protection Bill, and the National Gambling Act. We also just hope that the NCOP would be able to finalize everything and that we will have that three pieces of legislation in place. Then also, as you know, also at your request, we've proceeded to Cabinet to get approval of the Beijing Treaty and the Rome Convention. These all arise from the Farnham Commission for us to protect copyright. And then if I can sort of turn towards the conclusion, which is really to look at the administration, and I know you have asked a big question about capacity, which maybe I will answer a bit later in full detail, but let's say we've always put a lot of emphasis in developing the appropriate skills. As you know, we have a learning academy. We offer the biggest amount, and I think out of all the departments, in terms of sending people on on doing their masters, their PhDs. We are active in support of that, and to build the capacity to grow our own trees. But creditor payments, again, that is always 100% on track. Also, with regards to women's empowerment, as I said, we prioritize this, and it's now 52%. And then, as I said, also with regards to employing or career paths for employees with disabilities, we also exceeded the target there. If I can just, as I said, I'm not going to go into this, but in general, I will only comment where there is some reds, but in general, it is mostly green. I'll just come on. There's only one area where in the third quarter we do have some reds, and it's this one. It's under the jobs supported in terms of our incentive program. And as I said, we're trying to improve the situation here, but basically there's the amount of applications we receive for our incentive program was lower than we expected. And as I said, then that is because of the state of the economy, where companies were not expanding investment because they were in any case not running at full capacity. They were running at 60% capacity, and as the manufacturing circle tells us, nobody's going to add new production lines if you are not using your existing production. But as I said, but we have been engaging with them actively to try to, as I said, at least when the upturn comes, for them to make those investments. But that is the only ones I will comment on. If I can then turn to, as I said, these are the full details of all the quarterly reports. If I can then just turn to the final part on the finances of the department. As I said, in terms of the financial performance, here, as you can see, we obviously always work on towards the target of having no underspending in the department and much below the 2%. But as I said, so in terms of the year to date, we've spent 6.1 billion, which is 99.1% of our budget. So we are on track to actually maintain our record of trying to keep spending to below 2% or at least below 1% even. Is our target. So we're on track. Then this just gives you the breakdown as per the economic classification, and especially the biggest item there is on compensation. And as they say, there we're running at 98% with regards to a compensation of employees, goods and services. And then finally, if we look at the different divisions, our industrial development and part is, as I said, that's our biggest part of the budget. And then we also bring out, as I said, the only the big one who has been very busy in the period is Invest South Africa, because as I said, they played a major role in the big investment conference, and then also we had the work on the Job Summit, which the DTI was also actively engaged in. But as I said, spending is with 99% for the year-to-date budget. Honourable Chair, on that basis, I want to thank you, and we open for questions.
Members, can we give each other opportunities to ask these questions and rather have two rounds of engagement, starting with yourself, Honourable McPherson, Honourable Alberts, Honourable Kachalia, Honourable Buyani, Honourable Esterhazen, Honourable, I thought I saw another hat, Honourable Mathlobo. In that order, please.
Thank you very much. DG, can you give us an update on MSEP? Where are we going with that? It's something I've been talking about for the last couple of years, saying we need to get a long-term view on it. And I think it's really important that as a committee, you know, we understand where that, you know, where that's going on a longer 5, 10, and even 15-year view. With respect to YES, I was reading that it hasn't had the desired uptake as was sort of envisaged. I think that the President said that they were looking to see 300,000 young people employed, and to date it's only about 2,000. What is the specific reasons for that, if that uptake is not what was envisaged? On the industrial parks, I mean, you know that this is my, you know, sort of real focus, because I think that there is massive potential, but until such time as any concessions are secured at either local government or provincial government, it's just not going to work. It's not going to work because I don't want it to work. It's going to not work because you know as well as I do that they are in far remote locations at oftentimes, and when they are charging market-related rents, when they are charging input costs through electricity and water at, you know, the same cost as any other industrial zone, well, there's no real reason to be there unless there is a concession. So, you know, again, I ask, at what point is the DTI going to hammer out concessions with local and provincial authorities to actually attract those investments there? And then also finally, then last on the I-12 tax incentive, I think that that's a really good incentive to bring people particularly into SEZs. But unless that is, you know, again, a forward long-term view to I-12, you know, I think that the appetite to take that up or go into specific areas is less than what it optimally could be. So if you could just give us, or just at least give me some progress on those four matters.
Thank you, Honourable McPherson. Honourable Alberts.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, DG, for the presentation. I know this department does a lot of work to try and save what can be saved, you know, in the economy. But I want to ask you what could seem like a difficult question. And we have this stubborn high unemployment rate in South Africa. And, you know, it's been there since I've been in Parliament, since 2009, and it's disconcerting. I know that what you do saves a lot of jobs along the way, but we don't seem to make a breakthrough in getting people employed. Now, there are different rankings in the world, but we seem to be among the highest or the highest unemployed or have the highest unemployment rate in the world, depending on which ranking you're looking at, but we're always up there in the top. And we need to find a way to break through this. And for me, logically, to get there, we need to review our policies. What are we doing wrong? Have we learned anything in the last 25 years? Is there something that we can change? Is there a practice that's happening elsewhere that we can emulate? Honorable McPherson now talked about the SEZs and how they could be restructured to make sure that we'd actually attract investments in there. We see a lot of money flowing to Mauritius at the moment, not South Africa. We see a lot of money flowing to other places, but not South Africa. And then it brings me to the other thing that's quite a disconcerting event. The newspapers have reported on the five large trading countries that sent a letter. There was some confusion about the status of the letter, but apparently the letter that was sent from them complained about a few things in South Africa, like corruption. But I remember that the media, and I'm not sure if it's correct because I haven't seen that communication myself, but they talked about black economic empowerment. They talked about, according to the media, also about the intellectual property regime in South Africa. And I would like you to tell us if you know about this letter, what the contents of the letter is, what those concerns of those countries are. As I understand, they represent about 20 to 25% of our trading value, and how we would react to that. Because I have a sense that there's a correlation or actually a causal connection between what those countries see as a problem and what we have as a problem in South Africa in breaking through and really getting people employed in South Africa on an almost full basis, as much as it is possible that an economy can carry people. And I'm saying this with great concern because, as I've said before to the Commissioner of the National Consumer Commission, things aren't easy out there for people. And we, as elected representatives and as people working for government, are serving the people, and we have to make sure that we employ the best policies possible, evidence-based policies that will work in South Africa, that can give people hope in this country. Thank you.
Honourable Alberts may have just missed this, what you said. Who had written the letter? Or which way was, you know, which annual or report was
Madam Chair, it was reported in the newspapers, well, the media in general, that a letter was sent from, it looks like a joint letter, so I'm relying on what the media said. It was in Business Day and a couple of other newspapers. I can't recall exactly which date, but the letter was sent from the United States, from the UK, from Germany, from Switzerland, and there's another country that I forget now. Five large trading partners of ours that complained about various issues. And there was some, I know the Minister of Foreign Affairs, Minister Sisulu, she was quite upset because it broke protocol in the way it was presented, and there was some confusion about the nature of the letter. And apparently it wasn't the letter sent directly to the President. It was a working document that was supposed to be part of discussions with the President by these countries. But be that as it may, they raised concerns. What we do know now is that they have raised certain concerns regarding what's happening in South Africa, you know, governance issues and so forth, and policy issues. And I just would like to, you know, within the context of them having sent this, and this might have an effect on our foreign direct investments, when we reconvene as a parliament, will we be looking with a fresh look at what we do wrong and fix that, and the things that we do right, do that better, so that we can implement the right policies? For my senses, and I have to say this, as a member of parliament and who works with constituents, people are getting restless outside. They are not going to wait for us to wake up. They're going to overtake us if they don't see solutions. So we have a big responsibility to make sure that we do our jobs. Thank you.
Was it yourself? I'm sorry, Honourable Kachalia.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I thank you, DG,
for your input. I'm sure you're aware, but I'd just like to point out you referred to the a reduction in the fourth quarter of 4 percentage points in unemployment. And I think we need to put this in perspective because that is clearly a seasonal boost in terms of the holiday season employment in the service industry. The general consensus is that that from economists across the board is that things are going to get worse. And you know, the president himself says that we need 5% growth for unemployment to reduce. Clearly, we've shown some traction in job creation in the manufacturing industry sector, but our balance of payments, if you like, in this area is still needs significant attention, and perhaps you might want to revise targets in areas like the export help desk and the like, because if traction has been achieved, then that needs to be pushed and ramped up. I'd also be, to Honourable Albert's point, I'd be interested in also in you know, given that incentives are one thing, but what stands in the way is another thing, and both needs to be addressed, particularly with reference to the letter from the five trading partners as a starting point and a pointer. If we address things going forward on that basis, then I think we may get somewhere. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Kachalia. Honourable Buyani.
Chairperson, thanks. Let me start by welcoming the presentation. Chair, China is currently experiencing a low growth in terms of GDP, and they have since come up with a stimulus program. I just wanted to check whether, in terms of the economic growth as a South African partner, how this is going to affect us as South Africans.
Thank you, Honourable Buyani.
Yes.
You still carrying on?
Yes. And also, I wanted to check, man, what is the state of textile industry? And what are the measures in place to revive the industry, more especially here in Western Cape? There's also this SEZ. I'm interested in what are the targeted industries in the Nkomazi SEZ, and also if you can get an update on the Phuthalichaba Industrial Park and also the level on investment in the park. One but not least, Chair, the sector, what are the estimated number of jobs and job opportunities are envisaged on both SEZ of Nkomazi and the Atlantis? The last one, what sector are you intending to invest in the Atlantis SEZ as well? Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honourable Buyani. Honourable Easterhuizen.
Thank you, Chair, the DG, for the report. And I must just say, Mr. October, that yesterday I sat in the Department of Energy, and this report, comparing to this, is like a pleasure to read. Really, this is so much better, but there's still some little things that you mentioned here, improvements in the steel industry. You know, AmSA's only made a profit the first time this year, I think. Before that, they've always made a loss. With the tariffs was implemented about 2 years ago already to protect them. And still, the downstream industries from the cheaper prices was never filtered through to the downstream industries. So the whole engineering industry in this country suffered still from that. ExxonMittal also cut their whole operation to the bone. They shedded a lot of jobs. They did so many things wrongly. There was a commission appointed to sit with them that never sat as well. And you know that China still, since the tariffs were implemented, dumped about 500,000 tons of steel still in this country. Still. Now with this American-Chinese war that's going on, I don't know what China is going to do with it still, and I'm afraid even to ask. I also just want to say something about the industrial park, these economic zones. This, unfortunately, also is a Chinese idea that was also took over in this country. And what unfortunately is happening is that Chinese people, workers come, the community around this industrial park never get involved. Chinese workers come. Chinese transport businesses take the products to the harbors, to the docks, and there's never value added. If you take in Limpopo, for example, they buy all the pecan nuts out. They pack it inside the industrial zone. They add value. They not even the salt from South Africa is added on this. And that for me is a problem. So I don't really see, and they get all the benefits from the economical zone. But how does this country then benefit from it? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Esther Hazen. Honourable Ms. Lobo?
No, thanks, Chair. I think the first matter the colleagues are raising, I think the matter has been dealt with. You remember the question of the ambassadors? And that decided to do a joint kind of a documentation, which was unfortunately leaked out. And it has been responded to. It's not like other people want to take it a vocal mileage. That thing was an old story. And despite those issues, if you look at the investment drive that the president has done and the amount of commitment towards achieving our 1.2 to 3 trillion investment over a period of 5 years, I think we're doing well. Probably the issue is to say what we need to do certain things so that these conditions of these commitments can be actually be realized in terms of project readiness, all the regulatory framework, the conditions that we need to deal with. But let's not make a meal out of it, because even some of those embassies, they apologize. They know there's a process on how to deal with issues of international protocol. But on your economic, firstly, the report is good. You are doing well. But there is going to be always an expectation, DG, through you, Chair, that we need to do more. We can still do more. On your economic outlook, DG, we need to start to factor in certain things that are happening. You look at the world, including the World Bank, there has been a downward trend in terms of the forecast in terms that they've been revised downward, including us, ourselves, in terms of our domestic outlook. But I think the happenings over the last few days, including the projected happenings that will happen in the next few weeks, around energy security, there is going to have to be a thorough look again, because the reality is that we don't know to what extent are we going to revise our outlook for growth downwards. The impact of the crisis of Eskom right now, we might not actually be having the figures, but it's going to be felt over quite some time. And therefore, the energy crisis has to be resolved as a matter of urgency, because we will be going below what we're projecting, and we don't want to start to have a negative growth in terms of this closing of this year. Then the other thing that DG, you will have to start to do, there are certain things that even in our broader industrialization policy framework and the industries we support, we need to start to factor in the reality. What does this thing of technological revolution, others they call it fourth industrial revolution, means for certain industries? They are going to be affected. The fourth industrial revolution is not coming, it's already here. And it's going to start to make certain impact. And we need to be geared so that at least we can project, seize the opportunities, but at the same time, start to deal with the question of mitigation so that we can cushion those that are most vulnerable. From a policy point of view and from the plans, we need to do that, including the question of Comrade Chair. This thing of climate change, we thought is far. It's here. It's happening every day. You can't predict it. The droughts are here. The overheating is here. Many things are actually happening. And we need to start to say, within this condition in which we want to grow the economy, what are these imperatives? The document you present, I want to speak to slide 60 in the expenditure there. Firstly, read slide 60 with the question of the SEZ. I'll speak to the program, the SEZ. That we actually very glad now that at least the necessary approvals have been given, like Comrade Hepi speaking to. And you could see that because the approvals were not there, the expenditure is below the norm. You could see it's an outlier in terms of the variance. I just want to check with you now whether in terms of capacity, the necessary institutional capacity, including acceleration plans, so that we don't lose the money that is there, because the SEZ is the most strategic intervention that had to happen. You don't want just to have an approval, but the readiness to commence and do the work. The last one, Comrade Chair, is on transformation. If you look at the issues around transformation, we know there are certain people who don't believe in the transformation, like the DA. They've made it a policy statement. They don't believe in BEE. To us as the ANC, we know it's a constitutional matter, redressing the imbalances of the past, Comrade Chair. But there is an important issue that you need to keep an eye, DG, as the people that are actually the champions. If you don't do that, there's going to be a lost opportunity. Yesterday when we met with PRASA here, not PRASA, the Transnet, Comrade Chair, one of the biggest things they don't do is to have the necessary policies, not the charters, the necessary policies in line with the question of Invest South Africa, in line with our industrial policy action plan. You know, if they'd done well, they were not going to concentrate on the supplier side. They were actually going to concentrate on the local, whether these things, these parts are manufactured here, so that you can trigger your manufacturing, the other issues of industrialization. Then there's a big issue. If you don't keep an eye on the Department of Mineral Resources and the Department of Energy, South Africa has been in difficulties that were an oil exporting country, and importing, I mean, including issues of gas, we've been importing a lot. Now that there is an acreage that we're able to exploit and is going to be in the hands of non-South Africans, do we have the necessary policy positions if the work is not done by South Africa? You have your own acreage, is owned, is exploited by people who are not South Africans. What happens? Then the money is going to have a flight to these other countries like they've always done. Please keep an eye on it that they have the necessary policy frameworks. Policy frameworks with clear targets. Not this thing of designated things in terms of the practice note. It doesn't work. They have to have a policy because these are the strategic sectors that must be looked at. To me, it's just to say these are some of the issues to say you can do more using the leverages as the champion of having the necessary legislative instruments that we can still sharpen. So at least in 20 years, 30 years' time, we don't have a problem. Those are the issues that, Comrade Chair, I thought I should be able to raise, because we must learn, and we can't repeat the same mistakes.
No, thank you very much, Honourable Ms. Lobo. DG, before you come in with your team, what I would like to Chair, here in the committee, is it does concern me that we have a document that is not owned by the respective countries. I don't know who the fifth is offhand, but certainly I think the Honourable Alberts himself acknowledged that not some of the countries were apparently disputing this. It was a working document, and the issue is that in committee, the status of documents is very important. Otherwise, it becomes part of a commentary, if you like, in the media as such. Now, the status of this document has been brought into question not only by our own government, but by the governments of other countries. And therefore, given this, it certainly, the clarification is that it was a working document never sent to the President. I think we must make it clear that we either have a policy of dealing with broad commentary on documents that have no recognized status, or we begin to entertain everything we hear. So I think what we will do, Honourable Alberts, is to treat what you said. It occurred in the media, and in the media there is comment, there is speculation, etc., and leave it in that particular realm, because we do not have the status of this document confirmed. Honourable Kacharya?
Thank you, Chair. Just in response, two finger in response, if you like. It's not simply a question of commenting on everything that's out there. This is a constructive engagement, which I framed in my comment, and to echo Honourable Alberts' comment, to encourage the DTI to address the impediments that stand in the way, as opposed to only looking at incentives. Now, that was encapsulated in this letter. It was also, I'll remind this committee, brought to our attention by a delegation that sat across there of eminent German visitors from government and industry, whose comments were more or less exactly the same. Now, these are the things that we need to take cognizance of and address in our committee and bring to the attention of the DG to address in a productive way so that we go forward. There's no party political scoring as is being suggested in any way. This is how we should deal with things.
Yes, I am merely asking committee members to recognize that it doesn't have a status and should be regarded as commentary. Commentary is allowed. It's not illegal, but we do need to be sure what we're talking about. All right? I do have a question myself, DG. The issue around investment, and we heard very clearly in the House yesterday the achievements with regard to investment in the country. And on page 40, it's clear from your statement here that we have exceeded the 4 billion. And the red one here, which is quarter three, you have provided an explanation that indicates you are still awaiting some of the figures. So, but notwithstanding figures that we are waiting for, figures we already have is in excess of the target of 4 billion. I thought that I should just get that clear understanding. But certainly, I think everyone sitting on this committee would raise a concern of the reality we are all in, and that is, yes, energy is having an impact on manufacturing and industrialization. And while that is not directly part of the third quarter, in fact, there were problems in the third quarter in that direction as well. And I would certainly hope that as part of these multi-party teams that are established, that that can be addressed. And I wanted to propose that at least it is considered, this idea of staggering the manufacturing times. Why should it all occur 8 to 5? Why isn't it staggered through the 24-hour period and that kind of thing? And that at one stage was put forward by the manufacturing circle itself. Thank you.
Honourable Chair, thanks for that. And I think let me maybe kick off, because with the issues you've raised as a starting point, and then I'm going to, as per the convention, all the complex questions I leave to the Deputy Director Generals to answer. So I'm going to ask Malebo to come in with the issue of MSEP, and then Stephen, just to deal with Honourable Mboyani's point about the clothing and textile employment numbers and the overall numbers. Malebo.
Thanks, DG, and good morning to honourable members. I think on the MSEP, a little bit longer. On the MSEP, yeah, I'll try. Better. On the MSEP matter, as I think DG in other engagement has mentioned, MSEP as a program was developed for a specific reason. It was dealing with the issues of the global economic crisis and how we assist our companies who were losing global market share to continue to be competitive in a very difficult time. And money was set aside for it, and that money was then used for that purpose. What we are looking at now is not a repeat of MSEP, because the circumstances that present have changed. So we're looking at a generic program for manufacturing, but that is dealing with different issues now, because what we're dealing with now is not a demand from external demand, as in export demand. It's actually local demand that is now a big problem. We also are looking at how we can assist the companies with innovation to get them ready for the fourth industrial revolution. And then, of course, the issues of climate change that were also raised here. How do we assist companies with resource management, both in the sense of energy, water, and the various resources that they put into their products that they produce? So there will be a generic program for manufacturing. It will not be an MSEP, and that one will now be dealing with issues of how do we support our companies now who face local demand issues, and we have to support them now for more of export markets rather than just a focus on our local market. So that is where we will be with MSEP. I don't know, DG, if you want me to deal with 12i also. Yes, because it was also asked. Indeed, 12i is still going. Again, we've come to a point where we are now oversubscribed, and we've started engagements about a year old with National Treasury. We've reviewed the current 12i, and we are about to present the findings to National Treasury. Some of the things that we're looking at, the 12i was focusing on mainly supporting investments into special industrial zones. We're looking at whether we shouldn't also support investments going into the industrial parks, which are now being revitalized. We're looking at issues of bringing the investment as quickly as possible to materialization, so that we're not sitting with prospective investment that is not materialized, and also the types of skills that we are supporting, so that some of this innovation technology that we are putting into the country are now localized to make sure it's maintained here and then it's upgraded here, so that we create more value chains from the investments that we bring in. Thanks, DG.
Then the chief economist, and then CPO Sikodi, if you want to add.
Good morning, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. To respond to the question and the comment around China, perhaps, just to mention that, as Honourable Members will know, China's growth has been slowing over the last decade, actually. So at the moment, the forecast is about 6.2%. If you think back 2 or 3 years, it was 6.8%. Before that, it was even 10%. And that's partly because of the way China's economy is developing. So China's embarked on an approach that's not export-led industrialization anymore, but it's more focused now on growing their service sector and growing consumers in China. So, of course, it is a concern for us as South Africa that the Chinese growth rate is slowing, but it's something we've been preparing for a number of years, and Honorable Biyani will probably also be aware that a lot of what we export to China is raw materials, so it's not likely to have as big an impact as it would be, for example, some of our key export markets where we export manufactured goods to, for example, Africa. If those markets were slowing substantially, then I think we would be very concerned. So I think we're only very modestly concerned about China's growth at the moment. And then in terms of the clothing and textile programs, honorable members, we normally report on the statistics that we have collected from the companies that we're supporting directly. Sometimes those statistics come out before StatsSA releases information, but what we can see now happening in clothing and textiles is quite significant job numbers coming through from the StatsSA data as well as from the data that we collect on programs. So, for example, over the last 2 years, the data StatsSA has released indicates that about 29,000 jobs have been created, and of those 29,000, about 19,000 new jobs have been created in the clothing sector and about 7,000 new jobs in footwear. So you'll have heard us reporting over the last 2 or 3 years about 200 jobs here, 300 jobs, 500 jobs there, 22 new clothing factories being opened. And now the numbers are actually showing up in the StatsSA data. And 29,000 jobs over 2 years, it's not enough, as the DG was indicating, but it's a step in the right direction, and it's quite a significant change in direction that we've seen over the last 2 years. Thanks.
Thanks, DG. Thanks, Chairperson. On the question about the targeted industries in the Nkomazi SEZ, Nkomazi SEZ is mainly for the agro-processing industry, although there will be other support services and other sectors, but the target there is mainly agro-processing, taking the opportunities that are in the area and around the border and on the other side of Mozambique. And then the Atlantis SEZ targeted sectors there is mainly renewable energy and green technology. At the moment, we have a number of projects in wind turbine manufacturing and wind turbine blades. So mainly it's green technologies there and renewable energy. And then the Putati Chaba upgrade in terms of the investment that has been done there. I'm just struggling to open my things here, but I think in a few minutes I'll give the numbers. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Honourable Chair, your question and your point about, as I said, with regards to the investment targets, we've achieved our investment targets, but as you said, under the export one, we have not achieved our third quarter target, and because we don't have sufficient information. But the point we wanted to just make, as you know, the annual target was 4 billion rand. So technically speaking, we haven't reached the third quarter target, but we're already at 4.1 billion in terms of our annual target. But as I said, we also think there'll be more coming, because it was January month, so we didn't get the information from all the companies with regards to the export target. And then the second issue raised, Honourable Chair, which I think has been raised sort of throughout, is the question of electricity. And we really want to, as I said, get your support on this, because as you know, besides the other issues around why we haven't made progress as a manufacturing sector and in terms of is the electricity constraint. electricity prices, besides the supply of energy, there's been almost a 500% increase over the past 10, 15 years, which renders our manufacturing sector uncompetitive. So, as you know, in terms of the stimulus package announced by the president, he said we don't have a lot of fiscal space, but in that package is cheap electricity prices. So what we are asking for, and we're going to be doing a lot of work as the Industrial Development Division, we need a carve-out for the manufacturing sector. Strategic industries need a lower electricity price, or they must be given the right to generate their own electricity and get wheeling rights to be able to do so. And as I said, when we met with Vedanta, the big zinc investment in Northern Cape, there they told us it is normal for them all over the world. They build their own electricity plants as part of the investment. It is normal for them to do so. So we want to say that going forward it is absolutely essential. And it's not only the electricity charges, but also the Transnet charges. The port and rail charges are also excessively high. We need those two supply side support, because as you know, we've been over relying on incentives. The real point to really help industries to provide low cost electricity and to low cost transport costs, low cost port charges. So that is absolute going to be our focus for our industrial policy going forward. Honourable Chair, I think in terms of Honourable McPherson's point, I think we've covered the MCEP, the industrial parks, the SEZs, and then the only issue is around the YES program, the Youth Incentive Program. Yeah, I think if the committee wants, you should maybe invite, because this is a private sector have committed to these targets. It is their plan. Government had to bring its part to it. They said, we're going to do this. Can the DTI at least just give us the BEE support? We have gazetted those changes. So it is now up to the private sector to implement that plan. And I think really we need to go on a major drive to get the private sector to meet its commitments. And maybe you should also invite them here. And let's, as I said, some companies are doing very well. Investec, Standard Bank, others, but some are very slow, and maybe we should really start rewarding those who do and employ young people, and those who don't must be named so that we can get corporate sector on board to implement this YES program. As I said, we've met our side of it by giving very, very good BEE incentives for this program. They can go one level up on the scorecard if they implement the YES program. So, as I said, we are now really asking private sector to really support our young people by offering them the 12-month internships. I think Honourable Albers has raised probably the biggest issue about, and Honourable Mashlobo, what can we do more to deal with those problems? So I mentioned the reason for our very, very high unemployment rate. As I said, part of it is our own failure to create to develop a very competitive manufacturing sector because of high input prices. But the other problem is really a historical problem, because as you know, this economy is what was called, it was stuck in the low wage, low skill trap. So despite all the wealth produced by this country, we underinvested in the population in skills. People will not be given the opportunity to develop the advanced skills, but most importantly, 90% of the population remained impoverished. So as Adam Smith said, the biggest driver of growth is the size of your market. So we have an extremely small market, not only here, but on the whole continent. So as I said, it's never a good strategy if you want to build capitalism to impoverish 90% of your population, because they are your consumer base. And they must drive aggregate demand. So our only solution to this problem is A, to reclaim back the parts of the domestic market that we've lost, and that means we must reintroduce unconventional industrial policy. We must actually protect our industry more. We must raise tariffs where we can. We must actually actively support procurement and buy local. We've invested more money in Proudly SA, but we need to stop more imports and buy more locally and so on. And it means we must, as I said, like the U.S. did with unconventional monetary policy, we need to have unconventional industrial policy in the sense that we made a mistake by prematurely just opening our economy. We need to protect ourselves more. But that's the only way we're going to solve the unemployment problem, is export-led growth and reclaiming the domestic market. And then, as I said, a big input factor is transport and electricity. Because I think Honorable Che, you and Honorable Mashlova have dealt with this issue, and I won't deal with the issue of the five ambassadors, because in terms of their diplomatic protocols and so on. Let me just say on the content, we have been engaging actively with these five ambassadors for the past 6-7 months on these issues. None of these issues they raise are actually controversial. It is standard issues they've raised. They've raised the issue about the mining charter. They've raised the issue of political uncertainty, the visas, the land issue, and so on. And as you know, the president has dealt decisively, and at the investment conference, the mining charter has been resolved. The visa issue is partly resolved. He's given the guarantees that everything will be done constitutionally. South Africa has a very proud record of constitutionality and independent judiciary. And as I said, there's no fear about it. So we've engaged with those ambassadors. And as I said, even with the Germans, they fully have, committed. They are the biggest investment in our economy now. And then also the Swiss, Swiss Port have had their contract extended. But as I said, the only negative has been the localization, where some of these companies have made investments, but they haven't received, because of the corruption, they haven't received the necessary commitment from Transnet to do the locomotives. But on the whole, ourselves and the envoys have been engaging with these ambassadors, and I think that's why I think the Durka was a bit upset, because, as I said, there has been constructive engagement on this matter. So I don't know, but they will deal with the issue of the protocols and so on. I think Honorable Alberts, I think, as I said, that you're absolutely right that our we're going to have to focus, have a laser focus just on unemployment as the challenge. And as I said, we'll have to take extraordinary measures and in terms of in-skilling our population. We're also redirecting even the Black Economic Empowerment Program. We're saying for companies, if you can, as an equity equivalent, if you just invest in skills development, for example, in the call center or the BPO yesterday, Excel, they want to create an academy and a center of excellence in analytics, and then employ young people, train them up, and then they can do analytics and so on. So we said that can then count as the equity equivalent under the BE program. But as I said, we're going to have to find all the tools to drive, as Honorable Mashlova says, so that we can just do more on that. I think we dealt with Honorable Mboyani's point about the Chinese stimulus package and then the targeted areas and so on. And Honorable Estazen, as I said, on the steel industry, that is starting to turn around. It has been slow in coming. But in addition to that, as you know, the what is used to be called the Vol Triangle has suffered industrial decline. We just had a meeting last week with the Premier of Gauteng, already the growth initiative, we want to look at developing maybe a revival of that Vol Triangle area, and even possibly do a feasibility study, which they will commence on whether a special economic zone can be done to revive that old sort of steel sector or industry part of the country and so on. Honorable Chair, I think that covers most of the questions so far. Thank you.
No, thank you very much, DG. Did you respond to this point raised by the Honourable Esterhazen on the pecan nuts or something like that? And as I was thinking when he raised it about the value addition, what was there,
yes,
he was very concerned.
Yes, well, as you know, there's been a change because, as you know, these industrial parks was really started under apartheid, and it was a big Taiwanese were attracted to these areas, and they were offer wage subsidies, and it was highly exploitative, cheap labor, no union rights, nothing, and they brought in Chinese workers and exploited South African workers and so on. So those industries that were attracted were footloose. They were never embedded in the economy. One day they're in Lesotho, one day they're in Botshabelo and so on. We've changed the model, and we've said we must have quality investors in these zones. So you must buy the labor laws, but we give you support. So, and have quality, be part of the ecosystem. You're not allowed to bring in Chinese labor. All those things is not allowed anymore. We are asking everybody to follow the law and so on. So I think, as I said, as you said, in these new SEZs that we have, there's high quality employment. And employers are there for the long term. They signed 30-year leases now. The Chinese company, the automotive industry, they signed a 30-year lease. So it's not the footloose as before.
Right. Thank you very much, DG, for that. Members and the department, we are going to be taking our tea break. It is 10 past 11. And if we can try and get here at about 25 past 11. And we will be starting with the UK Post.